of personal insights aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to squabble over in the interim. Now, if you want to call, you can do that toll-free from the United States to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322, or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area to find out if one of those very old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show. You can just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives now. My own blog is located at howtheneoconstolefreedom.blogspot.com. And my blog for this week, not up yet, will be on Blackstone Group, the hedge fund being used to hedge the bets of the power elite in their ongoing attempts to anticipate how to install more and better grids in our lives, this time through the natural wish of people to communicate, speaking to each other through all the mediums and in all the ways we have developed over the history of humanity. The purpose of Blackstone is to own, control, censor, and profit from that very communication. See the blog up soon on how, why, and what Blackstone very unintentionally tells you about their intentions. Catch the article this week on my blog, in the Iconoclast, or on American Politics Journal. Getting off the grids that force the flow of our lives into the coffers of corporation and government is an essential to establishing the truth of freedom that evades so many Americans today. And now our thought for the week ahead. Anniversaries invite us to look back in time and forward into the future. And no anniversary is more significant for Americans than the one coming up next Wednesday, the signing of the Declaration of Independence. That was a mission statement, and mission statements matter, no matter how off track the whole enterprise manages to go eventually. Thomas Jefferson wrote those words in just a few days. He'd been asked by the assembled representatives in Philadelphia. They were from all of the 13 colonies, and they went to him and they asked him, because he had a sort of a knack for that thing, to polish their resolution so it would speak their mission and the very revolutionary viewpoint that the colonists were presenting to the world on the subject of individuals and the relationship with each other, with government, and with God. The document including that mission statement and goes on to itemize the causes for the separation. Last week I suggested you think about those causes confronting us today and that you compare those to the causes outlined in the Declaration of Independence. Now, I've been working on mine, and those include the war in Iraq, the Patriot Act, canceling habeas corpus, the North American Union, the refusal of Congress to get off their duffs and take action on impeachment, and the list goes on. I'm sure you have your own list. Just send it in and we'll add it to mine. You probably noticed that we have more cause today for a change of service provider than we did in 1776. When Jefferson sat down to write up the Declaration, he drew on the ideas of the Puritans, the Quakers, the Iroquois Nation, ancient Rome, the Grecian states, and such thinkers as John Locke and Hobbes, to formulate in just a few words a spiritual and physical statement that compelled and inspired that generation and would inspire generations yet to be born. He started we hold these truths now. These were the ideas that the founders agreed would define their lives. They remain the vision in which we invest belief, and so they're true no matter what those who have hijacked government do. He went on to say that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's really where we all begin, isn't it? We're born into the human family through the labor of our mother, and with our rights inviolate and intact, given to us by God. Jefferson went on that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. What that says is a government's a convenience, a contractor we use or don't use to provide those services we want performed for us that we can find no other way to handle. What we use, we can change at will. No government itself possesses any rights. It's not a person. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, we're the ones who have the power of change in our hands. That can't be taken from us because it pre-exists both the Declaration and the Constitution. The words of Jefferson evoked a spiritual truth as well. We're each of us sovereign in soul, possessing an immediate and personal relationship with the sacred, however we see that. That's our nature. We don't have to acknowledge that truth. We never have to step foot in a church or bow our heads in prayer. That's just our nature. Our rights are inborn and cannot be altered by government, no matter how they scheme. The only sovereign, the only one in control of your life is you. You've doubtless noticed that this is not how the world works today. That tiny government that was intended to simply allow for a minimal national defense and deliver the mail, something handed to Benjamin Franklin because everyone liked and respected him as an elder statesman, has grown like a cancer into something so huge and big and intrusive, it makes the Roman Empire seem like anarchy. Parallel with that, the excesses of the U.S. government would incite the envy of the Emperor Nero. This is the bait and switch, the con game that those who grab power as a convenient way of stealing with little risk to themselves evoked over the last 200 plus years. The fact is, given that original mission statement you should keep in your mind, you should never have ratified the Constitution. If you can't begin in a way that affirms your founding principles, it's best not to start at all. The signers and founders that was very exciting. We had a little hiatus. And I think I was telling you about our founding principles and the fact that we really shouldn't have even ratified the Constitution if we weren't going to actually deliver the goods. And the goods were the affirmation of equal rights for everybody, including women and blacks. When they didn't go ahead and do that, they created a sort of a bankruptcy, and they probably ought to have had a bankruptcy sale. Instead, we probably should have remained a loose network of colonies and towns that got together and argued once a year on how to spend the budget for the necessities they grudgingly allowed to be handled by government. And that really was the practice back then. Several hundred of you and your best friends and neighbors would get together in a room and you would bicker over every penny. But you certainly knew how it was spent. And that meant transparency in government and responsibility in government. Now, government is not rocket science. In its elements, it is much more like collecting the trash, and experience has showed us that there are many ways to make it work. Jefferson had this to say about government to John Cartwright in 1824. Quote, "The constitutions of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. Or they may act by representatives, freely and equally chosen, that it is their right and duty to be at all times armed, that they are entitled to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of the press." Not much ambivalence there. On July 4th, across the country, people will be barbecuing, grilling chicken, I can just smell it, steaks, they're going to have corn on the cob, and they're going to be enjoying the summer weather. When dusk begins, they'll turn their eyes to the sky to see displays of fireworks light up the darkness of night. That is only the inconsequential part of how the 4th is celebrated. In my family, the focus on the day is a different moment. For us, it comes when a quiet falls, and all eyes and ears turn to listen to the youngest among us as he or she rises to read the Declaration of Independence in its entirety. And that's how America always used to celebrate the 4th. Now, we're all familiar with the words, but still, the sound of those phrases bring tears to our eyes because we experience the determination and courage of a people attempting what the world said was impossible. A small group of people determined to experience a different world for themselves and for their posterity risked everything. It was a good beginning, a step into the darkness that today has lit fires of hope across the face of the world. On the 4th this year, remember, the real fireworks are not in the night sky, but in you. Reach inward and light the fuse. Our speaker today is L.B. Bork. He's an individual who became aware of the need to change the direction for America many years ago. For those years between, he's been working to give people the tools they need to awaken to the encroaching presence that is sort of typified in the movie The Matrix. He wants to help them find their own exits from the grids imposed by big government and big business. Since the year 1994, LB has helped several groups around the union with legal matters. On one occasion, while working with an attorney, LB had the opportunity to attend a meeting with Jeff Dickstein, who occasionally collaborates on tax cases with renowned patriot attorney Larry Beechcraft. Something Mr. Dickstein said gave LB very deep insight into the situation we Americans face today. During his activism, LB encountered the 14th Amendment and came to understand how it had been used to establish America's own version of the Matrix. He saw that there was an exit, and he was fired with the need to show others. L.B. Bork spends most of his time helping people avoid the shysters and hucksters He believes that God's grace guided him to understand the simple principles of natural law. And he's going to tell us about it today. Please welcome L.B. Bork. L.B., are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
I am so happy to hear it, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a privilege.
Yes, I know we're going to have fun despite that slight little hiatus.
No, those things always happen. It's a technology age, and just got to deal with it.
I know, but just think about all how amazing the technology is and what we can do. It's a really good thing.
Yes, I often said if we didn't have the technology, I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing.
That's for sure. So why don't you tell us how you happened to get to do what you're doing today? Because I know that's a fascinating story.
The Matrix site, do you want to get into that or the generalities that you just went over?
Why don't you tell us, Barrett, more specifically, what was there a moment, was there an epiphany moment when you said, I've got to do something about this?
Well, I think that happened from Waco. Before that even happened, I was basically looking at, you know, issues in regard to Second Amendment, because every time you turn around, they're regulating firearms, and it seems clear in the language of the Second Amendment, which I find out is a bunch of smoke and mirrors anyway, that they're trying to control everything. You know, you can own firearms, yes, but they want all this paperwork to show that you own them. And throughout history, we find that, you know, they go around and collect them if they have the paperwork on you. So that's kind of a dangerous thing.
Well, it is. And, of course, the reason that we were supposed to have be as well-armed as the government was so in case we had to have one of those revolutions again.
Yes, that was the premise the Founding Fathers, or some of them, put forward. But unlike a lot of people, I've found some flaws of the Constitution in regard to our freedoms. It's all smoke and mirrors from what I have dug up or what I believe. For instance, in my book, The Red Amendment, which just came out, about 7 years ago, but the new edition just came out a couple of months ago, I point out some of the flaws in the Constitution which make me believe that they really don't want us to have guns. It was always under control of the Constitution anyway.
Well, it didn't used to be. It used to be that the idea of controlling your gun meant you shot straight.
Yeah.
And that, of course, was certainly the way that, you know, my ancestors handled the whole thing. They actually had to take their guns out with them because I noticed that several of them actually were scalped while they were out in the field in New England.
Sure.
That would have been like in the 1600s, early 1700s.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Right now, I don't think they would want people having tanks and things of that nature, you know, the modern weapons.
Oh, shucks.
That the military has. As long as we're on that path, I guess we got off the track a little bit because I was talking about Waco, and then we went into this issue, which is more deeper discussion into details. But that's probably my wake-up point was Waco, and I found that something needed to be done or something was wrong because here they were attacking Americans on American soil, you know, so-called. Put up a big red flag for me.
Well, that was very frightening, that they would do that and that they would get away with it so cleanly.
Yeah.
Many people tried to take action, and it didn't work.
Right. I went to a few things put on by different people. I think, I can't remember the one meeting I went to, but they had a speaker, and he had the actual FBI photos from the air. Of the burning of the so-called compound. And basically the whole thing was on fire in the rear, and the tank started it. They had the whole thing destroyed before that fire was even started.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, I saw the photos of that from the FBI and the civil case from the discovery they got. So.
Well, that was a very chilling experience. So that's what moved you into activism and deciding that you had to do something about it.
Right. I pretty much ignored government my whole life up until then. And that was about 20, 12, 14 years ago already.
Mm-hmm. Time flies when you're...
Yeah, have to count these days. They go fast.
They do. They really do. Faster all the time. And then you started probably studying and taking a look at what was really going on, and you realized it was very, very complex.
Right. Of course, the Internet was open back in 96, 97, so that really opened things up a lot. Of course, there's a lot of people that were doing things even before this, even back to the 80s. One of my mentors is Carl Granzy. He taught a lot of foundational law. He had a bunch of groups around the United States going, and unfortunately, to combat what was going on, they blew up that federal building in Oklahoma City, which was, you know, after, of course, Waco happened, to destroy evidence, I think, in one case, or cause a diversion and blame it on the so-called militia movement. And it really destroyed everything, even the law groups that Carl had set up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, I know there was a huge reaction.
It seems like everyone's underground now.
There was a huge reaction in the movement after that.
Yeah, but it kind of disappeared. It might have went underground more so, but it was less organized, you might say.
Actually, at one point, I knew people who were in the movement. I was never active in that part of it myself. But what I urged them to do was to make sure that they simply raised the dues to people who were in the militia movement, because at least then they could get the FBI to subsidize them that way. Because there were always more members of the FBI in the movement in any group than there seemed to be real people.
Yeah, I was part of a group, besides a law group, down in Arizona when I was there for a brief period of time in my life. Mm-hmm. And they actually sent FBI agents in to infiltrate us. And luckily, the guy that was running the group was smart enough to figure out these guys were plants, because they were... Well, basically, they were trying to instigate terrorism. They were trying to get us to do illegal things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just ridiculous. And the FBI is supposed to be this great organization, and here they are instigating, you know, illegal acts.
Well, it's nothing to what happens offshore.
Yeah. Don't even want to get into that.
Well, no, we don't need to today for these purposes. But so you started to, you know, become aware of what was going on, and you looked at corporations, and you had been studying the law, and then you saw the movie The Matrix.
Yes, that was 99, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was amazed how much parallel there was to our lives, and, you know, portrayed, of course, in a science fiction way. But a lot of the parallels are there. I mean, we're basically living in a false world.
Mm-hmm.
The legal system is totally false. That's one thing I learned when I had my corporation, and it failed, and it taught me a good lesson that I believe that insurance and all these safeguards, these commercial so-called safeguards, or the legal system creates or breeds irresponsibility,
mm-hmm.
and it takes the human faction or nature away from people, and just breeds irresponsibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does that, absolutely. So what you did is you took as a theme The Matrix, and you did a website that actually deprograms people.
Right, based on the real-life situations and what they're doing to us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want to give away too many of the details.
Well, people should go there, and it's at deprogram.us. And you actually hear whenever somebody goes through deprogramming, right?
It goes when they finish, yeah.
When they finish, it goes ding.
No, actually, Neil goes, whoa. The site emails us, and it goes, whoa.
And how well do you think the deprogramming works? Did you get a really good response from people who have gone through the little program?
Well, some people that have patience like it. there's mixed reactions. You can go on the site and look at the guest book and see the people that do like it and have thanked us for it. The guest book's only been up a year or less.
Mm-hmm. And how long has the deprogramming module been up?
Since the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But it's evolved into its its current state. That's the word I was looking for. Its current state. So.
Mm-hmm. And it looks very much like it's going to be a sort of online video game sort of thing when you go and
yes.
go through it.
Yes. It's geared to get the kids interested because they are the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the people that have been around or are comfortable, let's say, with this system that's provided for them aren't willing to take the chance. I know a lot of the kids are probably lost. That's why we see a lot of them dyeing their hair weird colors and tattooing everything on their body and going nuts, basically, which is very discouraging.
Well, that's become very prevalent. I mean, I was astonished when I first saw a woman who actually had a tattoo. It's like, oh, my gosh. Why would anybody do that? But evidently people, nobody in my family's ever done that, but you can definitely see that it's very prevalent in practice.
I live in a small college town, and there's three or four tattoo parlors here, and there's, it's under 100,000 people.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't mean to get off on that tangent, but I don't like women with tattoos, and they're disgusting to me. But
I actually had a brother-in-law who did have a tattoo, and it was a skunk, and over the period of many decades when I knew him, it kind of faded and looked really icky, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that. So I decided that would really be a stupid thing to do. And after you change, what if you change your mind and decide you don't like to have a skunk on your hand anymore?
Right.
It didn't seem like a good idea to me. But then, that's always been the case. People do things that don't seem like a good idea to me.
Right. Well, anyway, my point for bringing that up is the kids are lost, and I think they're just doing things indiscriminately.
And well, they've lost direction, but people find direction. It's amazing
mm-hmm.
that, you'll think that, oh, that person is, they're really on a horrible, bad bent, and, they're never going to find their way, but they do. It's just amazing when people really do. They just realize. It's almost like there's an internal control.
Yes.
And it's a good thing. So after somebody goes through the deprogramming module, then oftentimes they go into finding out about what you call the Red Amendment, and you've written a book about that.
Right. Yeah, we try to reprogram people with different methods. There's three things that they can visit at the end of this deprogramming sequence to start reprogramming themselves. And, of course, I'm a believe in the Bible and Christ, that's one of the directions they can go. Or they can visit a couple other different websites.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, one is the People's Awareness Coalition, which is the main part of what I really do. I'm the founder of the People's Awareness Coalition, which
mm-hmm.
is PACINALAW.org.
And what do they find when they go there?
The educational arm of basically what I've started about 8-9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the deprogramming sequence is part of PAC or that organization.
And when they go to the PAC, what sort of resources do they find there?
Mostly law. Basically, like you mentioned in the introduction, I've centered my research on the 14th Amendment. Of course, like I kind of mentioned, I think the Constitution has big flaws in it, and I think there's a lot of people have trouble letting go from the brainwashing that they've been given their whole lives, that this is the best government in the history of man. And I see that it's not much different than the Roman Empire used to be, even since day one. I think the Articles of Confederation were probably a little tighter, but there were problems with that also. So Nothing's perfect, you might say, but getting back to the gun issue, for instance, there's a clause in the Constitution which says to me, you know, we, of course, we mentioned the Second Amendment, which says we have the right to keep and bear arms. But there's been court cases that say, well, that's the organized militia that's under the control of the state, which I agree with because there's also a clause in the Constitution that says if any state experiences a rebellion or insurrection from any of the so-called inhabitants or, you know, the citizens, that the governor of that state can call in the federal government to quash it.
Well, they did that during the Whiskey Rebellion, and they did that at the Exeter Revolt.
Yes.
Which was certainly a very early example of that.
Right.
Though the Exeter Rebellion was actually fairly, you know, limited. But it was the first. And that, of course, went to an issue of taxation.
Right. But as long as they can have the governor in their pocket or the governors in their pocket, are somehow controlled, there's no chance for any of the states to rebel against their government.
Well, yes, but the people always have and retain a right to rebel and order the government in any way that they see fit.
Yes, they
do. The Declaration
cites
the fact that that's true.
That is a right, but I'm saying that this document doesn't allow it.
Well, the Constitution is clearly flawed, never should have been ratified in the first place.
So,
anytime, but again, you have the absolute right to change and alter it in any way that you desire.
Yeah, if you can get it done.
Abolish it. Well, that's always the dig, isn't it?
Yes, that's a dig. And if you read the PAC mission statement, we say that we're trying to educate people politically and get them to know that something's wrong. Because if you have the will of the people to want to change it without going to arms, that's the most effective way you're going to be able to do it.
Well, doing it without violence is always the way that you really have to proceed, because the transaction cost, if you decide to use violence on the communities and the people, is really horrendous.
Right.
And you actually have a way to do that, which is the whole point and focus of your book.
Right. We're trying to educate people to know that they've been taken. 14th Amendment, of course, is the crux of my work, and that's what I've centered on. We're taking baby steps, of course. Once we get that fixed, you know, then we're going to want to go back and fix some other things, too. So,
So tell us about the little baby steps, and tell us about the 14th Amendment and what you found in it.
Well, if you go back into, you know, the debates and things and go back to the Civil War period is where the foundation of this 14th Amendment came from. They started the Reconstruction Act first, and basically that was to impose laws on the southern states to get them in line, so to speak. Anyway, Congress tried to push these laws, Reconstruction Act, through, and President Johnson at the time, who was the predecessor, vice president to Lincoln, you know, after he was assassinated.
He was president then?
Yes. Yeah, he took the office when Lincoln was assassinated. Basically said, these acts are unlawful, you cannot do this, there's no constitutional basis for it. And technically, these acts only applied to the southern states. So what some shifty shyster lawyers did is use some of the elements of the Reconstruction Act and some of the language, and what they did is create the 14th Amendment, which affects all the states.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you would listen to all these historians and the people that... were, you know, debating this back during that period of time in Congress, etc. The way a lot of the language is worded in Section 2, 3, and 4, it makes you think, you know, your mind defaults to, well, they're talking about Civil War things. But in actuality, if you really read it, it doesn't relate to anything, or, you know, you could assert that it doesn't. And what they did with Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is create a new basis for representation in the states and Congress. What it does is set up a whole new political system. Section 1 and 2 work in conjunction together, and if people want to go to the People's Awareness Coalition website, they can download the document. I have a like an 8-page writing on it to explain how it works. But the Section 1 makes everyone federal citizens. They have so-called dual citizenship, which was non-existent prior.
Okay, let's get into this. So you have the state versus federal citizenship, and before, America really was a union.
Right.
And it was a union of the
countries.
States.
It's a union of countries.
Union
the states,
of little tiny countries, sort
right.
of like the Italian principalities or the German states
sure.
that then became Germany.
Yes.
And in some cases, of course, like in New England, people had more of an affiliation with their town than they even did to whatever the larger body was that we would think of as a state or a colony.
Right, or the counties, you know. That's the political subdivision of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And state ultimately just means, I think it means government. Of course, they say, well, the state is the people, but it's a reciprocal con job is what it is.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. The definitions, redefining the definitions of words was used as a way to change our understanding of the structure of government and law in that period of time, right?
Right, and there's a man I know, Joseph Rory, who's done extensive research on the conversion of terms prior to the Civil War and after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they even had Webster, Daniel Webster, the great Webster's Law, our dictionary.
Yeah,
it was involved in this. I mean, you got prominent people that have orchestrated or engineered this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the brainwashing or the conversional brainwashing.
Well, they started with Blackstone, right?
Blackstone from England?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of language that was used in America from Blackstone. I mean, there's legal principles that have been adopted or adapted to American law. There's no doubt. The roots of the American system of law comes from England.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the English common law.
Yes.
Which was very prevalent in the 13 colonies. And then, of course, is still prevalent, actually, in a lot of the constitutions of the states.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they don't recognize it because they're in this 14th Amendment system right now.
Right, and
system.
What they did is they did a conversion of one system to the other by displacement.
Right, exactly.
And so we have the American Union, which is the union of the states.
Right.
And then you have the people and the Confederation, which does not mean the southern states. That means all of the states together.
Right. Confederation is the same as a federation,
mm-hmm.
basically, and I have found very little difference between the terms. They're almost synonymous. It's just a union or federation of countries
mm-hmm.
or nations.
So you went through this, and you came to an understanding about what the way that the 14th Amendment had been used, and you actually did find an exit for people out of the matrix that they
right.
had created for them.
Well, the day before the 14th Amendment was purportedly ratified, which it wasn't, ratified properly, and that's one of the arguments. It's called the Article 5 argument. What they did during the Civil War is use the U.S. military, the Army, to go down and remove all the southern states, even after the war, after they surrendered, so to speak. It was a truce, more or less. And they passed the 13th Amendment, which supplanted the original 13th Amendment, which kind of just disappeared. They didn't repeal it or anything. It just disappeared in this original the new 13th Amendment, which is the Involuntary Servitude Slavery Amendment, took its place, and that was done by the agreement of the conquered southern states. And after that, this small group of conspirators wanted the 14th Amendment put in, and they weren't willing to do that. So what they did is take the armies down, our army down, and remove all the governments and put
them. So they removed the governments by force?
Yes.
When did that happen?
67, 68, somewhere in there.
Okay, and so having done that...
Well, that's the Article 5 argument, because it takes three-quarters of the states to ratify any constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no power. Like I said, Johnson said the Reconstruction Acts were unlawful. So how is it lawful to go in and remove de jure lawful governments by the consent of the people and still have this amendment ratified? It doesn't work.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be legally binding, but they certainly did it.
Well, they did it, yeah. It's all fraud, and here's the rub on this whole thing. To get the people to consent, these crafty criminal lawyers, like I was trying to lead into before, we're back on the subject of the federal citizenship. We kind of got off that tangent, but that's Section 1. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment creates a federal or dual citizenship, which mm-hmm. didn't exist before. Everyone just had allegiance to their state governments or their body politic or the people of their country. And now the federal government's saying, no, you owe allegiance to everyone in the union and the federal government. It's your protector now, not your state.
Mm-hmm. So that was definitely...
So that's collectivism. It's communism of what it is. But then in Section 2, what they did is the language is buried in there, and it's people don't believe it says that. They're thinking, no, they're talking about the southern states rebelling, but it says... If you prune out the irrelevant language, they're not irrelevant, but words that aren't necessary, it says, the right to vote in any election is denied except for participation in rebellion.
Well, that's certainly interesting.
Yeah. And so the definition of rebellion at that time, if you look up insurgent in Webster's dictionary from 1828, an insurgent is someone that breaks some of the laws of his country. He doesn't follow them.
Uh-huh.
He's willing to go against them. And in that same definition, a rebel is someone that's taking the sovereignty of his country and turning it over to another power.
Hmm.
So everyone that's voting in the system under the 14th Amendment is voluntarily giving the sovereignty of their country over to the federal government and rebelling against the republic system that was put in place under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And the tricky thing is they're using the constitutional premises still, but they're not telling people that they're criminals and they're really serfs because of that. So they become in servitude or slaves pursuant to the 13th Amendment, because it says... In the 13th Amendment, the new one that supplanted the original, that involuntary servitude is unlawful unless you're condemned of being a criminal or doing some kind of criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
So the criminal activity is participating in the new system. So you're, in essence, everyone in America is a slave.
Yes, you can certainly see that because of the grid system. And at some point, of course, a conversion took place and corporations really became the only citizens.
Well, that's all pursuant to that was one of the ultimate goals of the 14th Amendment, is to give corporations a status which they did not have before.
Uh-huh.
And protections under the 14th Amendment.
Protections that ordinarily you would have associated with people.
Right.
What they
did is implement a Roman civil law system called the Law of Persons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in my book. I talk about it, the new version. This is basically a whole system of Roman civil law is what they implemented.
Mm-hmm.
The original system had some of the characteristics of the Roman Empire, Roman law.
Okay.
But it fully didn't go into Roman civil law until the 14th Amendment.
Okay, How do people get off of to get off of the grid, out of the matrix?
Well, what they've
written
done,
a book about how to do it.
Right. There's a lot of people that say they have state citizenship, but that's also a part of the fraud or the deception they've created under this new system. Citizenship in America and throughout the world basically means you have the right to participate in elections and or participate in government. That's what citizenship is. And like I just pointed out, you can't vote unless you're participating in rebellion
mm-hmm.
against the original system. So technically, everyone's disenfranchised. No one can vote unless they want to be this, rebellion. So
right.
Technically, there's no citizenship. So what there's left is what we have in place is the de facto governments, which are unlawful. They're a fact that they're unlawful. They're not lawful. They're not de jure. And you have a bunch of disenfranchised state nationals. Everyone's nationality is still there, but they've taken that away also through legislation of Congress. Everyone's considered at birth a national of the United States and citizen of the United States if they're born in one of these insurgent 14th Amendment states.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did before the 14th Amendment was announced, ratified, the day before they passed an act that everyone has the right to terminate political ties with any government, and it was the remedy, so to speak, that they left out, because they always have to leave a remedy, even though they're playing these underhanded games. And that still is in effect today.
So that's what you lit on.
Yeah, that's what the book basically goes into, these remedies and the different laws and everything that pertains to it.
And so what you do is you show people how to go through the steps to sort of unaffiliate themselves.
Right. And it's based on nationality, not state citizenship, like
mm-hmm.
a lot of people say, because I say there is no state citizenship for the reasons I just pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't take your nationality away from you, even though the UN's a communist-based organization that's part of the New World Order, which is, this is all part of it. It's part and parcel to it. There was a thing called the Declaration of Human Rights written in 1948 by the UN, and all the party nations are party to that or subject to it. It says in there that everyone has the right to a nationality, and no one shall be arbitrarily denied or deprived of their nationality. It doesn't talk about citizenship. It talks about nationality.
Uh-huh.
So there, even though that, if you look at the rest of the thing, it's basically a socialist document. However, they're saying that it's a savings clause, similar to what I just said. They always have to leave remedies. What they're doing is all based on private law. And it only under the law of persons, everyone that claims to be these persons are subject to it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is break the ties. You take your title back, your lawful title or nationality back,
mm-hmm.
and disassociate yourself
and
politically with this system.
And your book shows them how to do that.
I don't go into the exact details, but I show them all the laws and things. I don't provide paperwork because of I've been in this 15 years, and there's a lot of people out there that steal material
uh-huh.
and try to profit off it.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep that pretty tight.
Okay,
like, I work with people on that personally.
They can buy the book, and they can read it, and they can figure it out.
They could figure it out, yes, if they want to, or they can call us, and we'll help them with it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, of course, you don't want other people doing it is that they tend to produce paperwork and outcomes that, don't conform to the law, so they get people
yes,
in trouble.
Yes, well, they infiltrate other things that's been mistaught or whatever, which is a problem. And another thing is, I'm trying to unify,
mm-hmm.
and that's been a big problem also. If you get all these profiteers out there selling different products, it's never going to unify anyone.
And that's one of the course things you want to do. You want to get people to go do it. Now, because lots of people have done it and nobody has had any bad outcomes.
No. I've been doing this 10 years, and there needs to be more of us, because these guys are just lying. You know, they're idiots. I'm sorry to use such harsh language, but the people in government are evil, and they're ignorant as anyone I've ever seen. And the sad part is they have this power trip going.
Uh-huh. So people, they go through the process, mm-hmm. they get off of that grid, and it changes their lives. I mean, in some ways, in other ways not. They can still travel, across boundaries.
Yes.
They can still work. They can still, you know, make an income. They can still do everything, but they don't pay taxes.
For the most part, no, not the income tax. Income tax, everything, you have to be within the United States to be taxable.
And so you've done is you've actually created extraterritoriality for them, is that it?
Yeah, there's a guy named Harmon Taylor I work with. He's an ex-attorney from Texas. This has been described by other people, too, as being the hover zone.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting people back on the land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God's land. God gave us the land. What we're saying is the Matrix, okay, for the symbolism of the Matrix. Everyone's hovering over the land in this fictional law land, you know. So they're in the hover zone, as Harmon states. And, you know, we bring them back down to earth, so to speak.
That's great.
Yeah.
And people find out about it by going through the Matrix, and then they can
the
get your book.
Mm-hmm.
And they get deprogrammed, they get your book, and then they can look at it, and they can make some decisions about,
right.
you know, doing it for themselves.
Right.
And then there's lots of other things that they can do from there, because now they're off one of the most compelling grids, and then they can take a look at the other grids that they're on.
But yeah, there are
lots of grids out there.
Sure. Our goal is to get out of the system. Eventually, as Revelation shows, that unless people take the mark of the beast, they're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade
mm-hmm.
and survive. So we have to get associations together in all the states to have our own ecosystem, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, and their own economy.
Right, economy. Right.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, thank you for being with us today. I hope that, you know, I hope that everybody goes to your site. I know that, you know, you've had a lot of people visiting lately and becoming deprogrammed. And,
yeah, thanks to you.
Well,
you've helped the traffic in the last couple of days.
Well, it was my pleasure. And God bless you. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July, and it's really been great having you with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Okay, thanks. Good night.
Good night.
And that's our show for today, Friday, June 29th, 2007. At The Spiritual Politician, we search for the deceits used to grab power, and those always present thieves of freedom that have clogged up our system like hair in the drain of life. Pointing out their strategies matters both for us and for them. How else will they know unless we make it painfully obvious? On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the sections of the Declaration of Independence that are America's mission statement. This is where we still need to go. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And I urge you to remember to count up your own bill of particulars. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster, coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.